from the studios of WAER.
And he's standing up into the goal line. Touchdown, Syracuse.
Battle gets a screen, pull up, he's good. Tyus Battle from 20 feet, and with 2.5 on the clock, Syracuse leads by one.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside. He scores the game winner. Give the assist to Don Madonna. Syracuse wins 11-10.
Comes the Ostrom Avenue podcast.
To Boeheim, quick trigger three from the top. He knocks it down, and we're tied at Spectrum Center.
15 left. He shoots and scores. Tucker Dornovic.
Perhaps the biggest upset in program history comes on Friday the 13th.
And now, your hosts, Brendan Mortensen and Owen Valentine.
Welcome into the very first November edition of the Ostrom Avenue podcast. It's the first November edition. It's also the first basketball edition. Looking at the Syracuse basketball team as they play host to defending national champion Virginia tonight. I'm Brendan Mortensen alongside Owen Valentine. And Owen, I'll start with the million-dollar question about this Syracuse basketball team. You look at the stats from last year. You watch the games last year. Three names jump out. Tyus Battle, O'Shea Brissett, Frank Howard. They're all gone. How do you replace the production of three of your top four starters and the leaders on the team?
Well, you say three out of the top four starters, and in addition to that, it's four out of the five starters when you put Pascal Chukwu into that mix.
Right.
Although statistically, he's not the biggest guy you have to replace. I mean, height-wise, he is the biggest guy you have to replace.
But he was second on the team in rebounds as well.
Correct, but that's a virtue of being 7'2 and
right.
Playing the center here. But when you do look at what Syracuse has to replace. It's over 50% of its minutes, 50% of its points, 50% of its rebounds, 50% of its assists. Those are your four major categories. And to replace 50 to 65% of all four of those categories is a really tall task. But I'll tell you what, I think Syracuse has the personnel to do it, and it's going to be in a bit of a different look. It's not going to be that iso ball that you saw last year, that late in the shot clock type, just throw up a heave and hope for the best situation. It's going to be a lot more motion, as you saw in the two exhibition games against Damon and Carlton so far. They're going to move the ball around. They're going to try and push the tempo because this team can run. This team can move. And for the first time in I don't know how long, I think we might be able to see Syracuse work with some depth.
And I think maybe not having those star players on the team might actually be a blessing in disguise.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you said, with guys like Tyus Battle and O'Shea Brissett, who are these ball-dominant guys, when you're in the half-court offense, it was kind of like, okay, is this going to be a Tyus possession or an O'Shea possession?
Yeah.
And you would just kind of work the clock down until about 10 seconds left. Tyus would be top of the key, and then he would make a move and try to make something happen,
mm-hmm.
which is great because he's Tyus Battle, and he could pretty much score whenever he felt like it.
Yeah.
He averaged 17 points a game last year, and he was that guy that you really looked to if you needed a bucket. If
yeah.
you needed a crunch time bucket, you went to Tyus Battle. If you needed a half court bucket, you went to Tyus Battle. And O'Shea Brissett was able to do those same things as well. But like you said, Owen, I think we're going to see a very different Syracuse offense this year. I think it's going to be one that's going to take a lot more perimeter shots, a lot more three-point shots, and they're going to move the ball around a lot more because I don't see anybody on the roster right now that you could look at and say, this guy is going to make their own shot off the dribble, and they're going to do it easily. And that's what you had last year with guys like Tyus and O'Shea.
It could be Hughes, but I don't know if I want Hughes to be doing that. If you look at the personnel that they have, Hughes is going to be the best in a bit of a similar role to what he was last year, but with a lot more taken on, if that makes sense. Because last season, you kind of saw him as this guy that was just always open because of the emphasis that you had to put on Brissett and on Battle because of what they did. And it was that iso ball offense that it created a ton of open opportunities for Hughes to shoot and for Hughes to drive. And he really excelled in that. I think this season you're going to see him with the ball in his hand a lot more, but I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing. When you see what he can do and his ability to shoot and even bring the ball up the court this season, it's going to be a new look for him and something where he can really excel and he can show how big of a talent he actually is, because even though there's not the true star on this team and when you come into the season as you might hope, I think Elijah Hughes is a star and he's got the capabilities to really rise and he's going to do what he needs to do. And whether that is take the ball up the court and be kind of the point guard slash forward guy that you saw him do occasionally in the exhibitions, great. Or if he's going to be someone that's not bringing the ball up the court and just be sitting there ready for a pass off a dish or an entry pass and just be able to drive, backdoor cut, shoot the three when it's open, he's going to be really versatile and really awesome and effective in both of those roles. And I think you're going to see him in both of those spots throughout the season.
So, Owen, I'll pose this question to you. No Tyus Battle, no O'Shea Brissett, no Frank Howard. We know Elijah Hughes is going to step up and kind of be that number one guy. But it can't just be Elijah Hughes.
No.
So who else on the team, in your opinion, is going to have to step up in a big way?
Well, when you look at the team, and I mentioned it right off the top, there's depth. There is depth. And as I kind of write down a mock depth chart of your 10/11, 12 guys that could be getting minutes this year, you're going to get something that you really haven't seen, and it's talented players that are just kind of lost in translation this year just because of the sheer volume and the style that Jim Boeheim runs. He doesn't like to go past the second or third bench player. So to have seven guys that could be getting minutes is a little bit concerning. You saw the five starters for the two exhibitions. I don't think there's any reason to expect something different for Virginia. And at the start of the season, that'll be Jalen Carey, Buddy Boeheim at the guards, Hughes and Guerrier in your forwards, and then Sidibe playing at the center position. But you've got viable replacements at pretty much every position. Goodine for Carey, Gerard for Boeheim, maybe Braswell for Hughes. I don't know exactly where Braswell fits right now. Dolezal could play for Guerrier, and then you've got Jesse Edwards and John Bolajac at the center. Whoever out of that duo plays, I'm not sure. One of them pretty much bound to redshirt, I think is the fair statement. Jesse Edwards kind of looked like the front runner after the two scrimmages. I think he can jump in and maybe play some versatile minutes. But in terms of who's going to be that number two to Hughes, I don't think you have to go past that incredible ACC run that he had last season and look no further than Buddy Boeheim. When you see how good he shoots the ball, and he's made some strides to improve. He looks much more mobile early on. He seems to have a little bit more to the repertoire than just shooting. Not that there's anything wrong with just shooting. He's an outstanding shooter, and shooters got to shoot, to use the cliche of a phrase. But he's got a little bit more to him this year. I think he can. I don't want him to run the ball, but he has the capability to run a little bit. And he, in that Damon scrimmage, had a couple of times where he's on a little bit of a dribble penetration, takes a plant step, spins around, and takes a little bit of a fade from right outside the paint. And that's a shot that he's going to make more times than not, and a shot that I'm really pleased with him getting.
And I think I agree in the sense that I think Buddy Boeheim certainly has to step up. I think he's got to be that number two scoring option more than likely. But I think much more than last year. Last year was a case of the starting lineup will go out, and you might have three of those guys play 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe the other two in the 25 to 30 range, and then Marek Dolezal coming off the bench, occasionally Jalen Carey, maybe Sidibe in for Pascal Chukwu. Uh-huh. But I think this year it has to be much more of a balanced effort. I think you're going to see a lot more guys in the 20 to 30-minute range. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Elijah Hughes plays 35, 38 minutes. I wouldn't be surprised if Buddy Boeheim plays 32, 35 minutes. Mm-hmm. But I think when you look at the other guys, I think Jalen Carey really has to step up.
Yep.
Because I think the way that this offense can be most effective is if Jalen Carey is handling the ball and he's creating shots for both Elijah Hughes and Buddy Boeheim. I know Hughes can create his own shot, but I think Hughes is maybe more suited. I think he's just better off the ball. And I think if you can get guys like Hughes and Boeheim in good situations where they can shoot, I think that's how this offense is going to be most effective. I would love to see a guy like Quincy Guerrier have a big year. I think he will. Mm-hmm. We've seen a couple mock drafts that have Quincy Guerrier going in the top 20.
Yep.
I mean, this guy is a really talented kid. I think he's going to get a good chunk of minutes. And then I think you're going to see a lot of Marek Dolezal. I know he's going to be the sixth man, but I think you'll probably see 25, 30 minutes of Marek Dolezal. And then I'm expecting a big year from Robert Braswell. I love Robert Braswell this year.
I love Robert Braswell as well, but where I kind of got to jump in is I see Dolezal, and I hope this doesn't happen because he is that fan favorite. He does what every coach wants in terms of those hustle stats, but he could get lost in translation this year. He could just get lost in the ranks. If Guerrier comes out and has the season that a lot of people anticipate he could have, there's going to be that learning curve for him. Definitely, there were a lot of mistakes in the two exhibitions, some youthful mistakes, but mistakes that typically get corrected pretty quickly at the college basketball level. So there's a chance, at least in my eyes, that Dolezal kind of gets lost behind him. And if Sidibe and Jesse Edwards kind of put forth the minutes that they could, especially when you look at now you've got options. So if Sidibe gets into foul trouble, like you've seen
when
time
Sidibe
and time
gets
again.
Into foul correct. Trouble. That guy is a
Sidibe
foul
gets
machine.
Into foul trouble. But you've got Jesse Edwards who had some shining moments. Yes, he's a little rough around the edges, but could definitely be a viable backup. And in terms of who needs to step up, Jalen Carey. You kind of touched upon it a little bit. I think you know exactly what you're going to get from Hughes and Boeheim this season. There's not going to be too much of a surprise. Carey is the one guy with a lot of question marks because historically your question marks in Syracuse offenses have been the point guard and the center. So we just talked about the centers. But for your point guards, you need Jalen Carey to step up. And I want him to fall back into a true point guard role, which is something that he really wasn't last season. He kind of came in as a scoring guard last year, which I'm okay with him doing. But where you could see the most success out of Carey is if he kind of back pockets that ability to score, that pull-up three that you see occasionally, that ability to push in transition. Not to put it away, but keep it for those special moments where you can throw a team off and really be able to kind of take that, whoa, where's he going, and just use that speed, athleticism, that ability to run and push a fast break, and use that to kind of catch teams off guard and throw a little bit of a curveball in there. Other than that, I want him to kind of take a bit of a laid-back role and be that passer, be that distributor, because when you've got Boeheim, Hughes, Gerard, Guerrier can shoot, Braswell can shoot, Goodine can shoot, you don't need to be a three-point threat. You don't need to be a three-point shooter. So if he can fall away from that mentality that he has to score off of threes and pull up jumpers, he's going to be a really, really successful point guard and one of the major factors in what could be the successful Syracuse basketball team.
I think Carey is absolutely the X factor. Personally, this is just my own personal bias. I have loved Jalen Carey. I think this kid, it can be really, really special. You look at him on the defensive side of the ball.
Yep.
I mean, I know he's not the biggest kid in the world, but he is quick. And my goodness, is he good at the top of this zone. I mean, this guy just gets after people. I love what he does defensively. And I think offensively, Buddy Boeheim touched on it a little bit after the Carlton game. He said that he thinks having, you know, him and Elijah Hughes on the outside, if Syracuse is able to be threatening from the three-point line, it really helps a guy like Jalen Carey because all of a sudden you're spreading out the defense. And you've got Jalen Carey, who might not be the best perimeter shooter, but then he's able to be that slashing combo guard that Jalen Carey likes to be on the offensive side of the ball. And if he's driving and kicking out, that is what I want from Jalen Carey. Please. Yeah. I mean, drive the ball, use the pick and roll game, kick it out to your shooters. I would love to see Jalen Carey do that. But I think the other interesting thing is I think Bryson Goodine is going to get a good amount of minutes at that guard spot alongside Buddy Boeheim. Looking at the Carlton game, Goodine had more minutes than Jalen Carey.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think Jim Boeheim could probably have a short leash on Carey. We've seen it last year, certainly. Yeah. So I don't know how much faith Boeheim is going to have in Bryson Goodine as a freshman, or Goodine, excuse me. But we'll see. I think Goodine could have a really big year.
I think Carey's leash expands a little bit. It's no longer going to be your 5-foot metal chain that is attached, but it's going to be a little bit more of the retractable kind of leash. If you look into what you've seen early on, he's going to be that guy. He's going to have a little bit more freedom, but at the end of the day, Jim's going to be able to hit that lock button and rein him back in because there's still a lot of a question marks and variables surrounding Carey. But I think for the early part of the season, especially from what I've seen in the two exhibitions, Goodine's still got a lot of room to improve and a lot of youthful mistakes. I think that Damon game especially, there were just a couple of plays where I think the one that really stood out to me is it was a Goodine turnover at the top of the arc, and he comes down and fouls a Damon shooter on a three. And Jim just kind of looks at him, puts the finger up, and calls him over. And you're going to see that a handful of times early in the season with Goodine, I think. But as the season progresses, and it's going to be the same with him and Guerrier and Girard with those youthful pieces, it's okay because you have the depth. You've got the ability to swap guys in and out. There's nothing better than being able to push kids into uncomfortable situations, put them into those pressure situations early on, and kind of let them learn to swim by throwing them into the pool, because you have another option at each position with the experience so that you can throw somebody in there and you've got that tag team, the ability for Goodine to learn from Carey, for Girard to learn from Boeheim, for Guerrier to learn from Dolezal. And that is something that is extremely valuable, because when you've got that, then you've got the pressure. You've got the competition that stimulates in practice, because all these guys want to fight for every minute they can. And it's going to bring out the best of the young players. It's going to bring out the best of the veterans. And it's going to be able to really propel Syracuse throughout the season.
And Goodine could be a massive factor, but he's kind of been the least talked about of the freshmen, at least among Syracuse fans. Quincy Guerrier has kind of been looked at as the maybe O'Shea Brissett replacement. The similarities are obviously there. Plays the same to O'Shea Brissett.
Yeah.
Plays the same position from Canada, all that stuff. I mean, just a hyper-athletic wing, and I think he's going to be really good this year. And one guy we haven't talked about at all, which everybody has been talking about, Joseph Girard III. I love this kid. I mean, he's just one of those guys who, you know, he's not the most athletic guy on the floor. It brings up questions about how he's going to do at the top of that Syracuse zone. This guy's he's just good at basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just finds ways to score. He just finds ways to be an effective member of the team. And I could see him getting a good amount of minutes as well.
He kind of reminds me of a Trevor Cooney type player, in that when the ball's not in his hands, he never stands still. I just vividly remember you've got Cooney who just runs corner to corner, and then he pops up and finally gets a screen. And I saw moments of that from Girard. He is as mobile as anyone I've seen in these first couple of days of college basketball and these exhibitions, in terms of just trying to create some movement, trying to create space, and trying to get the ball in his hands, which I'm really pleased with, because coming into the year, myself, I'm sure you a little bit, and everyone was a little bit concerned. How is Girard going to transfer from having the ball in his hands the entire game? Every possession, every shot comes from him. And now being that secondary, tertiary type player, he's really excelled. He's done great. He's hit his shots when he's open. And that's something that really stood out to me, and something that could really lead to a strong year from him, is just understanding that he can now be in that different role, and he can be a distributor. I love the way he's been distributing the ball, passing the ball, creating options from other players, something that he wasn't necessarily able to do at Glens Falls just because of the personnel he was with.
Right.
But now he's with talented players. He's with Division I players. He's with Elijah Hughes, who could be an all-ACC caliber player. He's got the ability to distribute, and he's got the ability to score himself, which could be probably I could see him filing into that sixth man role by the end of the year.
I just want to see the cavalry lineup
of
JG3, Buddy Boeheim, and Elijah Hughes just raining threes. Yeah. I want to see that lineup so
badly. This team is going to be able to excel from beyond the arc. Last year, only 33% from three. This season, I think you could see that number rise pretty significantly, especially out of those three.
Yeah, Syracuse ranked 138th in the country in three-pointers made per game last year. I do not think that's going to be the case.
No.
But if we have a new-look offense, they have probably the toughest test possible to start out a season if you're a new offense. That is against consistently one of the best defensive teams in the nation, defending national champion Virginia. We know Virginia is not the same team as they were last year. We've talked about Syracuse losing their big three in Tyus Battle, O'Shea Brissett, and Frank Howard. Virginia's big three, that loss is probably much bigger and much more impactful for that team.
Yeah.
They lose DeAndre Hunter, who's the number four pick in the draft, and their two guards who had played, I think, 75 games together, Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome.
Mm-hmm.
Those two especially, I mean, DeAndre Hunter might be the most talented one of the bunch.
Correct.
At least that's what the NBA draft would indicate. From a physical standpoint, DeAndre Hunter was basically everything you could ask for and more. But when you're looking at consistency and the importance of positions, I don't think there were any two more important guys in the country than Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome in the backcourt for Virginia, and they're all gone.
No, was Kyle Guy not your, he's been there for 10 years, Jerry McNamara type, Aaron Kraft type, just
yeah.
always there?
He was like, just there forever.
You feel like he's a senior three times just because of the way he plays. And
he
that.
Just always beat you.
Yeah.
He just found a way.
He was unbelievable. And I will say, the one kind of saving grace for Syracuse, having to replace four starters and get tossed into the whirlwind against the defending national champion, is Virginia has to replace three themselves. So there is a lot of new faces on the court this year, and especially in this game right here, the ACC in itself kind of just had a complete turnover in personnel. Your all ACC first and second teams all gone. Out of those 10 players, zero returners. So there are going to be some brand new faces atop the scoring charts, atop the all ACC conference games and conference teams. And I think you might be able to see a couple of these guys in play tonight. There are so many question marks around what this game could be and what these two teams could be. And for Syracuse, I think they've got a really big benefit tonight in that replacement. And a team with a lot of similar question marks to Syracuse. Who's going to step up? Who's going to fill those minutes? Who's going to be that guy? Diakite, obviously, probably your top starter in terms of UVA, and then Hughes for Syracuse. Those are going to be two guys with elevated microscopes. They're going to have a big focus on them to just see how they play with the elevated circumstance and the elevated responsibility and a brand new role for them to be the leaders and the scoring guy for each of their teams. So it's going to be fun. I can't get much past that. I think it's going to be really fun. It's going to be interesting. And because of the two defenses these teams play, both consistently keeping teams to low scoring, it's going to be a close game by default because of that, which is going to make this extremely entertaining to open up the ACC slate.
And looking at this Virginia team with a little bit of a microscope here, I don't know. I know Mama D. Diakite had a fantastic tournament. I know he did. But he has never struck me as a player that could be a number one option for a team.
No.
I mean, Diakite benefited greatly from the fact that he had DeAndre Hunter, Kyle Guy, and Ty Jerome on his basketball team.
So how Diakite, does he respond tonight? Yeah.
Exactly. Diakite was consistently the number four option. He was kind of that guy that you guarded everybody else, and if Diakite beats you, Diakite beats you. Mm-hmm. But maybe if you're a defense, you're not going to let Hunter or Guy beat you. That was usually the mentality when you're playing Virginia. And now you're asking Mamadi Diakite to go from the number four to the number one. As the most experienced guy on the team. And I don't know if I see Mamadi Diakite being able to lead this Virginia basketball team, at least from an offensive standpoint. They lost 61% of their scoring.
Mm-hmm.
And they returned two starters, each of which I think only started 22 and 20 games respectively in Mamadi Diakite and Kihei Clark. And now Kihei Clark, he's a sophomore. Tony Bennett referred to him as the grizzled veteran of the guards. I mean, that's how young this team is.
That's a sophomore who was the fifth option last year.
Right, the number five option. I mean, Kihei Clark, again, played really well in the tournament. He made big shots when he needed to, but he was a distributor. Mm-hmm. They did not ask him to score the basketball at all.
Yeah.
And now you've got Clark and Diakite, and you're saying, all right, lead the team.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Talk about throwing a kid into the pool.
Exactly.
I mean, these two teams are doing the exact same thing. Virginia with the benefit of being the reigning national champion and a little bit more to help come in and replace in terms of experience. But the two teams are in extremely similar boats right now, and I think there's going to be a lot of substitutions, a lot of different looks kind of tossed in there tonight to just kind of see what works, what doesn't, and try and throw the opponent off guard, because there are going to be so many opportunities that you would not expect these two teams to have, especially in terms of Syracuse when you look at the depth and their ability to toss 10 guys out there tonight. Will Boeheim throw 10 guys out there?
He could.
I'm not sure. Depends on how this game goes. Depends on how the first two or three subs perform. But there's a chance that Syracuse throws 10 guys out there. And for Virginia, you've got three brand new starters. You've got three brand new looks. And I think it could be a bit of a sloppy start tonight to see two teams of pretty decent caliber. Obviously, your reigning national champion, number 11 Virginia, and a Syracuse team with a lot of question marks, but they always have the ability to throw a team off and to get that big upset win it's going to be fun to watch tonight. It's going to be really up in the air, and I would not be surprised to see Syracuse end up on the winning end of this just because of the fact that Syracuse has all these options, and someone needs to get hot. And if someone does get hot from three, whether it's Boeheim, whether it's Hughes, whether it's Girard, whether it's Goodine, I don't care who it is, but if someone gets hot from three, Syracuse is in this ball game, and Syracuse has the potential to get a huge win to start off the season.
I really think Syracuse could win this game. I mean, looking at this Virginia team, you've got Diakite, Braxton Keyes, another returner, and Jay Huff. And those aren't large contributors. Braxton Key averaged 6 points, 5 boards a game last year. Jay Huff averaged 4 points and 2 boards. A guy who's 7'1" averaged 2 boards.
Yeah.
I mean, that's also one of my bigger concerns about the game is Syracuse is probably going to go small at some point. Because Barama Sidibe will get into foul trouble. It's not a matter of if. It's a matter of when. And then is Boeheim going to go with Jesse Edwards at the center spot? Because what if you're Tony Bennett? You look at the Syracuse team and you see that they've got, yes, they have Quincy Guerrier at the four, but he's more of a wing. And then all of a sudden you throw out Mamadi Diakite, who's 6'9", and Jay Huff, who's 7'1". If you're Tony Bennett, this is what I would do. I would throw both of them out there and just say, defend them down low. Go ahead. Because who's going to do it? I mean, Sidibe is your best option at center defensively. And then do you throw Jesse Edwards out there to combat the size?
If you remember last season, Virginia absolutely torched Syracuse with that simple pass to the foul line.
It's such an easy pass.
Because it throws the big man at the center of the zone into the what can you do situation. If you step, you've got backdoor cutters that are going to be able to make layups. If you don't step, you can turn for the quick jump shot, and you have that option to just quickly outlet back to one of the guards on the wings for the three.
Exactly.
It's one of the toughest situations in the zone, especially for a young guy and some struggling players in Sidibe and Edwards. I'm very interested to see how they step up if Tony Bennett comes out and tries that same approach, which I can't imagine he doesn't because of how successful it was last year.
It's one of those things that you kind of watch and you're like, yeah, well, duh. Like, when you watch it, it just makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Like, where is the softest spot? The free throw line.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, if you're Syracuse, you'll let people take long twos.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the goal of the zone. Mm-hmm. You're not giving up threes. You're not giving up anything easy down low. But you'll give up. You'll give up mid-twos.
Yeah,
but somebody still has to defend it. And as soon as that ball goes to the foul line, what are you going to do? Just stand there?
No,
you have to go defend it, which means either your two guards at the top have to crash in or your center has to fill up.
Mm-hmm.
And if your center fills up, then somebody cuts back door and your wings are now responsible for somebody cutting.
Yeah.
Or if your guards pull in, then all of a sudden you've got their guards outside on the perimeter ready to take shots. I mean, when you look at it, it's the simplest strategy to beat the 2-3 zone. I don't know why everybody else on the planet doesn't do it, but Tony Bennett did it extremely effectively last year, and I would not be surprised at all if he does that same exact thing tonight.
The one thing that I will say is the saving grace and why most teams aren't able to do what Virginia did so simply is because Tony Bennett and Virginia last year had the benefit of the three-point shooters going, what, 75% from three?
Well, that's just it. During the three-game winning streak that Virginia currently has over Syracuse, that three-game winning streak includes having Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome, and DeAndre Hunter on the team for all of those wins.
Exactly. So when you've got new personnel and a drop-off in your three-point shooting, not a bad three-point shooting team, but it's not the three guys that you just said. And it's replacing them is so difficult. So for Syracuse, they have the benefit of they're not going to have to necessarily, and Virginia could come out hot, but they're not going to have to deal with the trio of three-point shooters that can just tear you apart that they saw last season and the 2 years before.
Kihei Clark shot 34% from three last year.
Not terrible.
Which is respectable, but I don't think he's going to be lighting up the floor like Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome. So, Owen, I'll ask you this. What is your official prediction for the game tonight?
For the game tonight, and I don't know if my cop out is it's going to be close and someone wins by three. I don't know who wins by three. If I was going to lean, I would lean with Virginia just because they have, well, you got two starters returning versus one, and I think the rest of the personnel is a little bit more refined. But I also think that Syracuse has that X factor, that explosion kind of factor that they could just come out and get hot. So I'm going to lean to Virginia, but that is not a knock at Syracuse. I think this is going to be a really close game, and it's going to come down to the last couple possessions.
Maybe this is just me being a Syracuse homer, but I'm leaning Syracuse in this game. The more I look at this Virginia team, the more I think that they just don't have the scoring. And I know this is going to be a very low-scoring game, as any Virginia-Syracuse game would be. You know Virginia is going to slow the pace way down, but I think this Syracuse team, I think there's just something different about this offense this year. I think as good as Tyus Battle and O'Shea Brissett were in the offense last year, I think taking away the ISO ball is going to be massive. And I hope that's what we see from the Syracuse offense. I hope it's not Elijah Hughes in one-on-one situations. Even though I trust Elijah in those situations, this offense has to move the ball around. They have too many good shooters to just play ISO ball. Yeah. So I think Syracuse wins this game. I think, like you said, I think it's close. I think it's a five-point game. I think it's a very low-scoring game.
Yep.
But I think it comes down to the fact that when it gets into crunch time, Syracuse is going to be able to give the ball to someone like Elijah Hughes. And I don't see Virginia being able to give the ball to Mamadi Diakite and saying, go win the game. I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how Syracuse, with the inexperience and the new pieces, responds to a defense that's as consistently stingy as Virginia's is. That Pac-Line defense is, it's tough to maneuver when you've got five returning starters, as you saw Syracuse last season. So to just throw a bunch of new guys into that mix and have to play against one of the top defenses in the country is going to be very telling for what kind of potential Syracuse has. But if they can come out hot, maybe hit a couple of shots and get ahead early, I think they're in the driver's seat the rest of the game. And so it's going to be that those first 10 minutes, I think, are going to play huge dividends to the rest of the game.
So, Owen, looking at more of a broad season standpoint, I don't know about you, but the ACC just feels like it's more open.
Yeah.
I mean, last year you had teams like Duke, who had, obviously, Zion Williamson, R.J. Barrett, Cam Reddish. Mm-hmm. You had North Carolina, who had Nasir Little, stars like that.
Virginia,
with Hunter, Guy, and Jerome. This year it feels a little more open. You still got those top teams in Duke and Louisville at number 4 and number 5 in the country, respectively.
But even Louisville right there is someone that last season was not in that conversation.
Exactly, exactly.
So you've got that mix already.
I mean, Louisville looked great last night.
Yeah.
But the ACC just feels a little bit more open. So, Owen, what are your general expectations for this Syracuse team this year? I mean, last year it's a good team. It's a 20-14 team overall. Mm-hmm. Kind of sneaks into the tournament again. One of those bubble teams. What are your expectations?
In terms of the ACC, I think I see Syracuse not in that top four, which I don't think is an astounding take, but I don't really see them falling out of 5 and 6. I think 5 and 6 in the ACC is the perfect spot for Syracuse. I think that's a successful season, but I really do see them kind of fall into that range. Syracuse has the potential to be a sub-10 loss team this year. 31 regular season games. I would not be shocked to see them go 23-8, 22-9 in the regular season. I think that gets them into the tournament where, what are they, an 8-9, maybe 7-10
seed? They'll probably be that 7-8-9 again.
Yeah. That's the range that they're in, but this is going to kind of be what you've come to expect from Syracuse. I think overall a little bit better, but you're going to get your high highs. Last year you saw that with the Duke upset, and your low lows. Last year you saw that with Old Dominion, with Georgia Tech. It's going to be that roller coaster again. I think the dips aren't going to be as much as you typically see, but I do think there are going to be a handful of dips just because of the inexperience. And that can come back to bite you. And so when you look at the team as a whole and the ceiling, maybe they get that kind of fortunate Sweet 16 run. They don't draw ACC teams early on. The 2-3 throws teams off in the tournament. I think peak is a Sweet 16, but I don't see them dropping out of the tournament. I think you can safely say that this will be a team that's not on the bubble. They're comfortably in, but not at a high seed.
Yeah, I think this will be a tournament team. I think it could be one of those that makes a decent run, as like you said, as one of those, you know, somewhere in the 6 to 8, maybe even 10 range, where you get teams in the tournament that don't know how to play against the Boeheim zone, and it lets you go on a little bit of a run. Looking at the conference as a whole, I don't think Syracuse is going to be in that Louisville, Duke, Virginia, North Carolina range.
No.
I don't see them there. I don't know if I necessarily see them in the Florida State range. I think when you're kind of looking at tiers of ACC teams, I think you've got those four with Louisville, Duke, Virginia, North Carolina. I think Florida State is in a little bit of a tier of their own,
yeah,
where they're not quite
they're
to the North
range.
Carolina, Virginia
yeah.
range, but they're better than a lot of the ACC teams below them. I think Syracuse falls nicely towards the top of the kind of cluster of NC State, Virginia Tech, and Miami.
Expected to finish last by a lot of people, come out and get a huge upset win last night.
I think NC State, Virginia Tech, Syracuse, Pitt, and Miami is a fair category to clump them in. And I think Syracuse goes towards the top of that.
Yeah.
That would be my prediction for this Syracuse.
It all comes down to
year.
Stealing a win or two against your top four.
Right.
Maybe that Florida State game can be a win. And then getting the job done in your 50-50 type matchups, the teams that are in that tier you just described, and then not losing your gimme games, your lowest tier games, the ones that you should win week in, week out, game in and game out. If you don't give those up and you grab your four or five quote-unquote gimme ACC wins, you're in really good shape. If you lose one of those, and now you've got to make up for that with a win against that middle tier, that's when it starts to get iffy, and that's where you've seen Syracuse teams struggle. If Syracuse can get the job done in those four or five kind of just take this win and run with it games, they're going to be in really good shape, and you've only got to go, what, 500-ish to be in the top third of the ACC
right.
after that?
And looking at the ACC schedule, first two games, Notre Dame and Virginia Tech, they're kind of both in that middle tier where
even that lower tier
could go either way.
Very winnable games.
Winnable games, certainly. At Virginia, always tough. Home against Boston College, that's one of those. You've just got to win that basketball
mm-hmm.
game if you're Syracuse. At Virginia Tech, at Notre Dame, again, those are really interesting games, kind of toss-ups. But and then Pittsburgh, Clemson kind of fall into that category as well. Home against Duke, you're hoping to steal one of the games at Virginia, home against Duke, at Louisville, and tonight, home against Virginia. You're hoping to steal maybe one of those games.
And fortunately for Syracuse, they don't have what I feel like they've had historically is that stretch of three or four games that is just you're pleased to come out with one win.
Right.
The schedule seems a little bit more spread out. Your Duke game is surrounded by Clemson and Wake Forest.
Both very winnable games.
Yes, you play Florida State and Louisville back-to-back on the road. That's your most difficult stretch.
Right.
And NC State to lead into that. So your NC State, Florida State, Louisville stretch is your most difficult around the middle of February. But you don't have that, what was it last year? Duke, UNC, and Virginia within a week and a half, 2 weeks of each other, something along those lines. It was just a crazy kind of spurt of 2 weeks, and for Syracuse to have that spread out and balanced schedule is going to be really beneficial because you're going to be able to work some kinks out after a loss with a lower-tier team. If you lose to that top team, if you lose to a Duke or a Louisville, your games following that are Wake Forest and Georgia Tech, respectively, which are two games where you're going to be able to bounce back theoretically.
It's going to be mid to late February that really decides the fate of this team because you've got Florida State, Louisville, Georgia Tech, Pittsburgh, North Carolina. If you come out of that stretch with three wins, that's massive.
Yeah.
In my opinion. If you come out of that stretch with three wins, which means you steal one either at Florida State, at Louisville, or home against North Carolina, and then wins against Georgia Tech and at Pitt, I think three wins in mid to late February will really tell you how good this Syracuse basketball team is.
Yeah. Where do they end up? I don't know. I feel like every season at this point, we're kind of in the Syracuse is better than last year, but at the same time, very similar to last year. So maybe this is the year that they get a couple wins that going into the season, you might say they have no business doing. But hey, that's why we watch the game. That's why we talk about the game. That's why you play the game, is because anything can happen on any night and any team can get hot for a little bit. And maybe that's the difference for Syracuse. Maybe that's what they need. Is to get hot at the right time, get a couple of ACC wins, and, you know, make a run in the tournament.
And it wouldn't be a Syracuse basketball season if you had absolutely no idea what was going on.
Correct. Correct, especially recently.
The expectations for this team are so hard to judge. I mean, I've been talking with people who said that they could very well come out and beat this Virginia team and then lose to Colgate next week.
Yeah, I think that was Chris Carlson from Syracuse.com made that take, and I'm sold. I kind of buy into it.
It could happen.
A very realistic kind of start to the season. Colgate is a really, really good basketball team, first of all. Let me just throw that one out in the open. This Colgate game next week is not a gimme.
It is.
Colgate is a tournament
the
team.
The definition of a trap game.
It's a tournament team that almost beat Tennessee in the NCAA tournament last year and returns pretty much everyone. This team could stun a lot of people. I think Colgate is a tournament team again this season. And I'll tell you what, I'm picking Colgate in the first game of this bracket, no matter who they're playing, because they are a really good team with a lot of potential and a lot of experience, which could kill a Syracuse basketball team that has a lot of question marks, as we've talked about.
And Colgate's coming out swinging, too.
Yeah.
I mean,
nothing to lose.
They play NJIT week one. They play them tonight. And then after that, they go at Clemson, at Syracuse, at Auburn. They're not messing around.
No, they want big wins. They want your former quadrant one wins. I know those aren't what we're judging to get into the tournament anymore, but they want those quad one, quad two wins. They want to play against those power five teams, because when it comes tournament time and you've got that resume saying, hey, we knocked off a power five team or two early on in the season, that just means so much more to add on top of a conference championship if you can get that trophy.
And I think ideally for Syracuse, you'd go into the Big Ten ACC challenge against Iowa with one loss.
Yes.
I think that's your best case scenario.
Yeah.
If you're I mean, obviously best case is no losses, but if you're Syracuse and you go into this Iowa game on December 3rd with one loss,
6-1,
you're feeling pretty good about
manageable.
That season.
Yeah.
Owen, final record prediction for Syracuse.
Final record prediction. So I tossed up 23-8 and 22-9. I'll go generous. A very generous 23-8.
Wow.
One non-conference loss.
Wow. I think I'm going to go 21-10. I think that's feasible for this Syracuse team.
Yeah.
I think as any Syracuse basketball season will go, I think there's going to be one game, a game or two that you just look at and go, how on earth did we lose that basketball game?
Yeah.
I think it's just going to happen. I mean, you had a few of those last year when Syracuse loses to UConn November 15th. Syracuse lost to
Old Dominion. Georgia Tech. Those are bad losses.
Those are bad losses. And I think there will be a few of those this year. I think there's going to be one or two. So I think Syracuse ends up at 21-10 in the regular season. I think they get into the tournament as maybe a 7. Maybe a 7?
Maybe a 7-ish. I just look at this non-conference schedule. You're playing 11 non-conference games. And to go 10-1 in the non-conference slate is not a gigantic ask when you look at some of the teams that
the non-conference
playing.
Slate
it's
is not
It's a weak non-conference
tough.
Slate. To have, I mean, not a knock at Colgate, but Colgate is probably the toughest non-conference game you'll play.
Sure. Colgate or Georgetown.
Yeah. So to go 10-1 in the non-conference slate, that means you got to go 13-7 in ACC play. Maybe that's a little bit generous. Maybe they don't get those wins, but I think that it would not shock me to see them go 23-8. Am I sold on my own prediction? No. But I do think that I would not be surprised to see that final regular season record at 23-8 for Syracuse with one non-conference loss and a 13-7 ACC slate.
Syracuse basketball season starts tonight. Million dollar question is, how do they replace Tyus Battle, O'Shea Brissett, and Frank Howard? We'll see. Game one test against the defending national champion Virginia Cavaliers at 9 o'clock in the Carrier Dome. Be sure to tune into WAER starting at 8 o'clock. We've got a special hour-long countdown to tip-off to get things started. Expectations relatively high for this Syracuse basketball team. There's only one way to find out if they meet those expectations, and it all starts tonight in the Dome. For Owen Valentine, I'm Brendan Mortensen. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.